I'd like to call this session of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs to order at 1:05. President and Representative Elkin, Representative Thomas, myself, Chair Lynn, and understand that Representative Dawson is either en route or they're looking for one of the others. She said that she would be here. So in the interest of time and everybody's schedule, we're going to go ahead and hear what testimony we can now, and if possible, we'll see about moving these bills out, but we have to have, obviously, a quorum we have to have first. So with that, I'm just going, already have in the book here, let's go to CS or House Joint Resolution number 27, and we're going to need to adopt this. So.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Representative Coghill.
Since you can't adopt any
well, that's true.
Copy of it right now, what I can do is tell you what I would propose to change and what this bill is about, and then let you go to public testimony.
Okay. Representative Coghill, please state your name for the record, and let's hear about it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Representative Coghill. I represent the North Pole area, District 11. I'm the majority leader, and that doesn't carry much weight sometimes.
I could.
This House Joint Resolution number 27 is a bill that found me. I didn't go looking for it. I found it by talking to some of my friends who were Vietnam veterans who had applied for allotments and weren't able to have their allotment applications completed. So I said, well, what's the problem? Well, when you ask a question like that, watch out, because information will come your way. And this resolution is the result of that, and I have several people who will be testifying who actually gave me the background and the understanding to put this resolution forward. This resolution really does two things. It asks the Congress to take another look at a reopener on legislatively formulated allotments, and it asks for the opening on a court case, the Shields case, and that's embodied in your two be resolved. I'm going to allow the testimony to give the history. I think they can do a much better job than me. The CS that I'm going to propose is as a result of one of our legal counsels telling me that there's a couple bills in Congress, and they have two different locations where they will be dealing with this very subject. And you'll hear those two bill numbers talked about, but one of them I didn't get both of them in the who to send this resolution to part of this resolution. So that's all that does. It doesn't change any of the verbiage in the resolution. It just says it changes who we send it to. There are two bills in Congress, one put by Senator Murkowski and one by Representative Don Young. One is House Resolution 1811, and the other is Senate Bill 2000, that this would encourage and support. So this resolution would undergird two of our members in Congress. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that you go ahead and take the time for testimony, and then we can discuss some of the particulars after, because I think you will be well-instructed as well as I.
All right. Before I go to that, anybody any questions? Panel like to ask questions at this time? If not, do we have a John Hopkins? That's one you'd like to hear from? Here we go.
I'm here.
Mr. Hopkins, identify yourself, please, for the record.
My name is John Hopkins. I'm here in Cordova, and I'm representing the Native Village of Eyak veterans. And I would like to thank you folks for allowing me to testify in support of the, I think it's HJR 27?
It's HJR 27, yes, sir.
I agree with what you folks say about the first go-around being confusing and very restrictive. It almost seemed to me when I was filling out some of the applications and things and looking at some of the maps that they wanted this this allotment thing to fail. It would have been nice if we were allowed half as many choices as the peoples who went before us, Vietnam veterans have missed out on a lot of things, like limited entry and other things like that. So it would be nice if we were able to have some kind of legacy that we could pass on to our children and our grandchildren. I thank you for taking the time to listen to me.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Hopkins? If not, I thank you for your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Sharon Cisney here. Just wanted you to know that I'm in Anchorage with the folks in Anchorage that are listening and possibly will testify.
Very fine. Thank you very much. I wish you were here.
Thank you. Me too.
Okay. Do we have a Paul Mayo, the Tanana Chiefs?
Yes, Paul Mayo is here.
Yes, sir. Would you care to make some comments?
Yes, of course. First of all, thank you for letting me testify before the Military House and Veterans Committee. I'm going to jump right into it since we only have 3 minutes.
We can take a little extra if you need to.
Okay. I want to thank the committee and other members of the House and Senate for its consideration and support of House Joint Resolution 27. This resolution is of great importance to Alaska Natives throughout the state because it is pivotal in persuading Congress to amend the Alaska Native Vietnam Veterans Act and to reopen allotments that were previously denied because they were located in the Tongass National Forest. Passing H.J.R. 27, the Alaska legislature will become the leader in our quest to Washington, D.C., to right or wrong on behalf of our Alaska Native Vietnam veterans. Tanana Chief Conference has 15,000 members spread across 235,000 square miles. Many of our members and clients are veterans that honorably served in the military during the Vietnam era. Because of their military service, many Alaska Native veterans were overseas when the government took allotment applications during the late 1960s and early 1970s, right before the Allotment Act of 1906 was repealed in 1971. The Veterans Allotment Act was intended to give those veterans another chance to get an allotment, but it has not done so. Amendments to the Veterans Allotment Act have been introduced in the House of Representatives by Don Young as H.R. 1811 and in the Senate by Senator Lisa Murkowski as Senate Bill 2000. Both bills were referred to committees, but no action since then has occurred. We believe that H.J.R. 27 will persuade Congress to amend the Veterans Allotment Act as it needs to be changed. Of the estimated 700 veterans who applied for an allotment, about 60% have been denied, and only one application has been approved. Obviously, the law needs to be changed. There are three major reasons why so many veteran applications have been denied and why the law needs to be changed. The first reason the existing law needs to be amended is that there is hardly any land left in Alaska that meets the Act's many restrictions. The case of Gilbert Ketzler Jr. illustrates the need to change the type of land available for veteran allotments. Gilbert volunteered and bravely served as an Army medic in Vietnam. Gilbert volunteered to go to Vietnam so that his three younger brothers would not have to. Gilbert was killed in action in 1969. Gilbert's father applied for a veteran's allotment for Gilbert's heirs, but it was rejected because the land Gilbert used was not the type of land available because the land was selected by Native Corporation. Mr. Kessler's heirs could receive an allotment under the pending amendments, which allow Native corporations to voluntarily relinquish land for veteran allotments. The second reason is the current use restriction requirements are unreasonable and take lots of time and money to sort out. The pending amendment solves this by replacing the existing use requirements with legislative approval. Legislative approval is the identical method allowed for all non-veteran allotments and would greatly help veterans or their heirs obtain allotments. And third and the last reason, the law needs to be changed, is that many deserving veterans who bravely served during the Vietnam era do not meet the existing military service time restrictions. Only veterans who served between January 1st, 1969 to December 31st, 71 are now eligible. Approximately 1,700 veterans are now excluded simply because their bravely served their country a little too early or a little too late. The case of Ronald Paul illustrates this problem. After serving in the National Guard for over 5 years, Ronald enlisted in the Army in 1967. He was on the front lines in Vietnam for 11 months until he was critically wounded in 68. He was told he needed numerous surgeries available to him only in a VA hospital. Ronald was hospitalized for over a year and today is a disabled veteran. Ronald is not eligible for an allotment under current law because he left military service too early. Ronald did receive a Purple Heart, but not an allotment. Ronald could receive an allotment under the pending amendment, which expands the military service dates to include the entire Vietnam era. And I just have one more paragraph here.
Okay.
Ruben Mixuk also volunteered and bravely served in Vietnam, but in 1969 he was forced to leave military service because both his legs were blown off by a mine. And the military told him he could not be properly, or he could be properly treated in a VA hospital. Ruben's veterans allotment was denied. Because he did not serve the required 6 months of military service between January 1, 1969, and December 31, 1971. Ruben could receive an allotment under the pending amendments, which expand the military service dates to include the entire Vietnam era. On behalf of our Vietnam veterans like Gilbert, Ronald, and Ruben, I thank you for this opportunity to testify about this important resolution. We hope this committee will vote affirmatively for HJR 27, and we are grateful for your support.
I thank you, sir, for your testimony, and welcome home. And it's interesting to me because I'm also a Vietnam vet. I wouldn't otherwise qualify because I'm not native. However, I served in Vietnam in 72 and 73, which means if I were otherwise eligible, I would not be eligible. Is that correct?
Yes. I apologize. I'm speaking as a Realty Officer for Canada Chiefs. I'm speaking on behalf of Native veterans.
Yes. But what I'm saying is if I were otherwise eligible for this, I myself would not be eligible because my service in Vietnam was 1972 to 1973.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Mayo? Representative Thomas.
Yeah, just more of a comment. I am a Vietnam veteran, and I went to Vietnam January 3rd, 1968, and I got out November 68. And I was going to save these comments for later, but just to ask you, and as when I got out the night before Thanksgiving without a debriefing or anything. I was in Vietnam one day and streets of San Francisco the next, and left.
Which was the most dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, they were killing people over here. and never debriefed and told of any rights that we had. I didn't know that I could have gotten a native allotment even when I came home. And like most vets, probably, I guess you call it, put my head under the sand and hid for several years. But the comment I have is, and the question is, I know some of the boys in Haines, most of them went from 65 till 68 and 69, and very few, I think by then they had drafted all of the guys out of Haines, but none left, for the natives anyway. And they had a couple guys who were trying to extend their, and when you go in, you have 6 years active service. I served from 66 to 68, and under the law, you have 6 years of military obligation. So we go into inactive service, and some people are using those extra 4 years to try to get under the guideline here. And I was wondering if you had any knowledge of people trying to do that. I wouldn't do that because I told them I think that was cheating, but they had attorneys telling them that legally they probably could. Have you heard anything like that at all?
I could look into it.
Okay, it's just that I heard a couple guys in Haines tried to do that, but then again, we were in the Tongass, and then they couldn't get it anyway. So we have, and I'm going to guess, probably 20, maybe 30 native Vietnam veterans between Haines and Clukwan that could have qualified, and Skagway. We have guys in Skagway, too, that moved around. So.
Okay, and we could look into that.
Okay, thanks.
And I was going to ask, to the best of your knowledge, how many people, native people, are excluded because of the time limits on this? Do you have any idea how many that is?
I don't have that breakdown with me. I just have this figure of 700 veterans, and 60% have been denied so far.
Okay.
And just one approved.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Mayo? Okay. Do we have a, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We have Ed K. Thomas. Are you here? Mr. Thomas?
I'm Desiree Duncan, and I'm the land manager for Clinton Haida Central Council.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman and honorable members of the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, it is a privilege and honor to testify before this committee. Like I said, my name is Desiree Duncan, and I'm the manager of the Native Lands and Resources for the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska.
Could you give me your name again, please?
Desiree Duncan.
Desiree Duncan.
And on behalf of Edward Thomas, he is currently in the air right now, coming back from Washington, D.C. and he asked me to read his testimony to you today. The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida represents about 26,000 members throughout Alaska and the United States. Our council evolved out of the dedication of our people to retain our subsistence way of life. Crucial to this way of life is the lands we have used for many, many generations. Most of this land is now within the Tongass National Forest and has been since 1909. The problem for us is that in order to get an allotment, you must prove you used the land before it was withdrawn. This means we have very few allotments as compared to other areas of Alaska. Our 26,000 members have only 22 certified, 4 approved allotments, and 31 allotments that are pending but not approved. The Sitka tribe has recently told me that its 3,900 members have only 13 certified, 3 approved, and 1 pending allotment. We are certain that your resolution will convince Congress to amend the Alaska Native Vietnam Veterans Act and reopen allotments located in the Tongass National Forest that were denied because the land in southeast Alaska was withdrawn for the Tongass in the very early 1900s. It is well known that the government did not tell people about allotments until the late 1960s and early 1970s. But by then, many who could have applied for allotments in the Tongass were deceased. A federal court case named Shields versus United States was brought in 1983 by several hundred people who had applied for allotments in the Tongass but were born after the land was withdrawn. The applicants hoped that the court in the Shields case would interpret the language in the Allotment Act in a manner that would allow their ancestors' use of their allotment land to count, but the court ruled the law required the applicants to personally use land before it was withdrawn. Thus, there are very few allotments in southeast Alaska. Adding to the pending amendments, a provision to reopen and approve cases under Shields will solve this disparity. Our veterans are also prevented from obtaining allotments because the Veterans Allotment Act specifically prohibits veteran allotments in national forests. The amendments to the Veterans Allotment Act, introduced in Congress as H.R. 1811 and S-2000, will allow veteran allotments in the Tongass National Forest. The amendments also provide other important changes. The amendments opens up the qualifying dates for the veterans who served in the Vietnam era covering August 5th, 1964 to May 7th, 1975. It allows veteran allotments on any vacant federal land, extends legislative approval for veteran allotments unless protests are lodged, allows the state and Native corporations to voluntarily give up land for veteran allotments, and allows heirs of deceased veterans to apply. For those who might think allowing more allotments will just increase the time it takes for the federal government to finalize the land transfers in Alaska, including the land the state is entitled to, I assure you that the amendments will not add more time, it will decrease it. This is true because of the legislative approval provision in the amendment. Legislative approval saves time and money. In fact, the finalization of land transfers cannot happen by 2009 without the expansion of legislative approval to all pending cases, the veteran allotments and the Shields allotments. Congress enacted the Alaska Native Allotment Act in 1906. So that Alaska Natives would obtain title to land and resources that fed, clothed, and sheltered them for thousands of years. Many Alaska Natives still wait for that promised title. I urge this committee to pass House Joint Resolution Number 27, and in doing so, urge Congress to amend the Veterans Allotment Act and reopen allotments in the Tongass National Forest. It has been an honor to serve before this committee and have my gratitude for your support of Native allotments. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Any questions for Ms. Duncan? If not, again, thank you. Do we have Ted Suckling?
Oh.
Ted Suckling online?
Yeah. My name is Ted Suckling, Indiana, Alaska. Thank you guys for listening to us. I hope that we can pass H.J.R. 27. But my little experience is that when we grew up around Nenana here, any land that we were using at that time back in the late 60s or early 70s was federal land. Now, since it's been taken over by the state, and so we've got very little to choose from up here. So anyway, that's all I've got to say, and I just hope that we can pass that. And I thank you.
I appreciate your testimony. Sir, are you with Post 3? Post 3 what? The VFW?
The Veterans Group here in Indiana.
Which Veterans Group is that?
It's Post number 3 in Indiana.
Post number 3 of what?
Alaska Native Veterans Association.
I thought that was it. I just wanted to get that on the official record. Any questions for Mr. Suckling? If not, I thank you for your service, and thank you for testifying today. Anybody else online would like to testify on HCR 27? Anybody else in the audience would like to testify on HCR 27? Reverend Foster, you want to join us up here?
Well, I just walked in. I'm not exactly sure what the provisions of the bill does, but I do have people up in my district that would qualify easily under the provisions of this bill because of their cultural limitations and things like that. They don't know paperwork, for example, and I know a lot of people like that. I'm Richard Foster, representative out of Nome, and for the lady back here. And I know a lot of them have extreme difficulties in doing anything like their IRS statements and things like that. Local nonprofits in Nome, like Quirk and Nome Eskimo Community, King Island Eskimo Community, takes it upon themselves to help veterans do that. But for the most part, they don't really bother anybody or ask anybody for anything, and so I would imagine probably at least half of the eligible veterans that would have qualified back in the late 90s before the deadline probably didn't even bother applying. I know the head of the local Native Corporation in Nome didn't apply himself even, and he's got a better education and he understands deadlines better than anybody, but he said it was just too much work. And these people have all had the use of these lands since childhood, and needs of subsistence in the summertime and things like that. So, in small communities like the Bush, like Representative Thomas, you know everybody in town, and you know what they do in the summer, where they go picking berries and things like that. All the Vietnam veterans now, I turned 60 this year. Yeah, so they're just another 20, 10, 15 years, they won't be around. And, I was trying to think. I think I was 20, 22 or so when I was in Vietnam. But anyway, I would support this bill all the way, and I would encourage and I hope that the members of this committee here would move the bill and keep it going. And I know that the veterans, a few that are left, would be real, real appreciative. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Representative Foster? Thank you.
Were you on our side?
I'm pretty sure.
Richard always does that to me.
If you remember when I got roasted my first year down here, you said that, I'm a Vietnam vet, and I said you are too, and I asked you which side you were on.
I know. Okay, well, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Anybody else online to testify? Anybody else in the audience? Reverend Cocky, would you like to wrap it up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you get a quorum to vote, I would only ask that you bring up the G version, which is dated 2/21/06, and in the back of that version, it has that this would go to the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. The the chair of the House Committee on Resources instead of the list of the leaders that actually goes to the committee of referral and then to our own congressional delegation in Congress. So I think that's a better way of doing it, and so I brought that forward as a CS. The other issues that I would at least put on the table, and that is from 1906 till now, the native allotment issue has been handled rather poorly, I think. And this is our only opportunity, really, to open up a window, or at least request that a window be opened up for those that were in service when they closed down the allotment issue in 1969. So I think it's a reasonable ask. I think we could actually go back and make some reasonable asks all the way back to 1906 if we really made the case. I just don't know that we're going to get there. There is a possibility of some state land being involved, and I will do whatever I can while I'm in the legislature to make sure that we stay appropriately flexible to get state land into hands where it's needed, and then work closely with the congressional delegation, which is my intention to follow this resolution all the way to Congress and make the case for Alaska Vietnam vet natives. With that, Mr. Chairman, what I would do is I refer to you a packet that I think I gave every member. Maybe Representative Elkins didn't get the entire packet, but it's a two-packet binder, which gives a very good history on this. And so if you want more information, I have enough to follow on to the next committee referral. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I know you have another bill to get public testimony up on. I will be available for other questions when you get the quorum, if you so choose, and then try to answer any right now if you have any.
Any questions?
Just a comment.
I had asked, and Nancy, we're looking at if we can just waive it. We've heard it, and then we'll do a waiver from the committee, and I think we have Representative Sisna online here, too, so that way be easier, Mr. Chair, if we can do that.
Also, I'm very good. Representative McGuire is also on the committee, and we don't know when she's going to be back.
Okay, well, as you choose, Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate that. That way I could get another hearing in the next committee, which I believe is State Affairs.
Right. And two of us are on that same, at least two of us are on that same committee. And
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to speak up.
Representative Sisson is speaking.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the sponsor of this resolution. It's really obviously a fine thing to be doing, and I really agree we should wave it out of the committee. Is Representative Grunberg there?
Representative Grunberg is ill today, I'm told. Representative Dawson is supposed to be here, but we don't know where she is right now. So she's probably in some other committee testifying or something. And who else is missing here? Representative McGuire, as we said, is excused.
Just for Representative Sisna's information, the only bill that you can waive out is the unamended. So if you waive that one out, what I will do is go to the other committee referral with a CS that would just change who it's delivered to. It does not change any of the substantive language.
That sounds good. Anything else? I think it's a very good bill. I think we would move it out today if it were possible, but it's not. So thank you for bringing the bill before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think just one comment. I too appreciate this in the end. I, being a Vietnam veteran, I was 20 when I went to Vietnam, 21 after 6 months over there. But I know a lot of my friends. When I came home, there was 14 of us that hung out in a bar. We'd get there at 8 in the morning and leave there at 5 the next day. And not one of us knew anything about the native allotment issue, but we watched people coming into Homestead, and we were wondering what's going on here. We didn't know anything about the native allotment issue, but homesteading people is going on all the time. And actually, through the years, people got their homesteads faster than my friends' parents and grandparents. A friend of mine just now got his native allotment through his mother, who had been dead for 40 years, and he's 61. And so, you know, it's just the timing takes forever. And it was like Richard said, we're 60, I'll be 59. But the time you go through the process, it'll be good for your children. So, the friends that I have, you know, a lot of them have post-traumatic stress, and they don't recognize that. And I think that's what Richard was kind of alluding to, that they won't agree, they don't want to admit that they have a problem, and they still hide from society. So
For disclosure, Mr. Chairman, some of my friends in Ninana did go to Vietnam, and I was in the military at that same time. I got my draft notice in 68, and instead of going into the Army or the Marines, I went and joined the Air Force. And instead of sending me to Southeast Asia, I was sent to England. So while many of my friends were slugging it out in Southeast Asia, I was stuck in a little corner, a very beautiful corner of the world in England.
I might point out that you're defending the United States, whether you're in Vietnam or England or in Alaska or any place else, even in military service. And last I heard, in the military, you go where they send you.
That's right.
And I'm sure, had you been ordered, I did not volunteer for Vietnam myself, and I got ordered, I went. Your service is appreciated, no matter where it is. And I would like to recognize Representative Dawson has joined us. We now have a quorum. And so we've been hearing a very good bill here, in my opinion, House HCR 27. Have you had a chance to review the bill at all?
I've already studied it, and I'm perfectly fine with it, Mr. Chair.
I would entertain a motion this time to adopt the CS for HB
27. Sure. I make a motion we adopt CS House Joint Resolution 27, version 24-LS0291/G.
Better recommendation.
We're adopting this one.
I beg your pardon.
And at this time, I'll make a motion to move it from committee. CS, House Joint Resolution.
No objection on the CS. And I'll make the motion to.
Right, okay. I'll make the motion to move CS HJR 2724-LS0291/G from committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you very much. Excellent bill.
And fiscal notes. May I just make one comment?
You may.
And when I had my orders, and I got home for, they sent me home for Christmas, and my orders said that I got 30-day leave, and then I was being reassigned to a restricted area overseas. And it didn't say Vietnam, but you knew damn well where you're going, because they gave you the gear.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, committee members.
We have war stories on the agenda here.
After the bills.
Yeah. Next, we have HJR 33, and I would make a note that we had HB 465 on marine safety and security, and the sponsor has pulled that bill at this time, so we will not be hearing that bill today, so we go to HJR 33, sponsored by Representative Cott, and please identify yourself, and let's hear about the bill.
Yes, Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Pete Cott, Representative for District 17.
A little louder, please. I'm a Vietnam vet and can't hear.
You go river. Mr. Chairman, that's probably good because that kind of fits into the purpose of this resolution. The resolution is a fairly simple resolution which encourages the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs at the federal level to consider allowing our Alaska veterans who currently receive services in the lower 48, primarily in the Portland or Seattle area, which have the veterans hospitals, which of course we don't have one here. So what they're doing, in 2004 we spent a little over $2 million in sending those individuals down to those two locations. That's just in travel. It's not talking about the inconvenience or the cost to the veterans for perhaps taking down their spouses or family members to accompany them, depending on what care is required. So, Mr. Chairman, what we're trying to do here is to encourage the Department, Military and Veteran Affairs, to make some compromise in allowing our veterans who need the care in the state to get that care rather than the travel outside. Yeah, I think there are many instances in which veterans are required to travel to the VA hospitals in which they could, in fact, receive very similar types of care, either in the Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, or their local communities, depending on what type of care is required. In addition, we're asking that they consider also developing a credit card, which will act as a mechanism for them to go into their own physician or their own provider, healthcare provider, hand that over to run through a machine, at which point the provider will be reimbursed by the Health and Social Services here at the state level, and then Health and Social Services, how it would work was then make that application to the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs for reimbursement or payment. So that, Mr. Chairman, is essentially what this does. This is the best thing we could come up with in lieu of not having the population base or the justification to build our own veterans hospital.
I'm very intrigued with this. Thank you. I'm very intrigued with this idea of the medical ID card, like an insurance card. That's a very novel concept, is it not? Is it used for anything else?
It is a novel concept. I'm not sure if there are other states that have recommended this or not, but certainly from our standpoint, it would be a more efficient way to do things, and it certainly would alleviate some of the burden that the veteran would have in filling out paperwork and going through the rigmarole that we generally don't want to do. If we're in need of services, we'd rather get in, get our service, and get out. So this would be, I think, a streamlined mechanism that would probably save certainly time from the provider's standpoint, time from the veteran's standpoint, and probably some efficiency at the federal level.
I know that when I go in for medical treatment of some kind, I have to go through just reams of paperwork, different insurance coverages that I have. And by the time I get done with it, I forgot what I went in there for. And then I come back, see the doctor the next day, and like they've already lost it. So, you know, and I have to do it all over again. So this is a very good idea. Any questions for Representative Codd?
Well, I have one. Yes, and you probably won't know the answer, but in regards to veterans' benefits, if, and I probably should ask somebody else, but in Vietnam, a lot of the guys were either sprayed or walked through the jungles and got Agent Orange on them. And, you know, I have had several friends that have died from aneurysms as a result of that. But my question is, the benefits that go, like, for myself, who, and I have children, and I know veterans who have children that have lumps all over their bodies, but they're not cancerous. And I had one boy had one removed this year, and it is pretty scary to think that you did something to your own kids. But is there a way, Pete, that the benefits go to the child when you know that what you've done, what happened to me, you pass on to your kids? Because Agent Orange, you develop a certain cancer, then it goes on to the children. Is there, you know, if the benefits extend down to that?
I might defer to the chairman, I don't.
Maybe we can find
believe
out.
Believe there is any mechanism in place that would cover, you know, your children in a situation like that. There may be a way that you can submit an application to the Veterans Administration and try to work with them on that, but as far as I know, you'd be pretty much left to your own health care insurance for that.
I never heard such a thing. It sounds like it makes common sense.
Yeah.
I know that for Agent Orange, to the best of my knowledge, I wasn't really exposed to Agent Orange in Vietnam. Nonetheless, I have. They make a statement that because I was in Vietnam, that I was exposed to Agent Orange. I may have been, didn't even know it. So I have certain medical benefits because of that, which I used.
Just another comment. You didn't even have to be in Vietnam to do that. I see, I was watching the news the other night, and they found a bunch of chemicals that was dumped in Tok, and they had the same thing in Haines, and they used to spray the pipeline corridor between Haines all the way to Fairbanks, and stuff still not growing on that corridor system. You can see it from the air where the pipeline had laid, so you don't have to go there to get sprayed or get some of the...
There had to be some kind of civil remedy for it, but you're dealing with the federal government, so that usually doesn't work. Any other questions for Representative
Chairman? Mr. Chairman, on that particular case, if you were a retired veteran, of course, your spouse and your children that are of 18 or under are still eligible for benefits at the military facilities. But I don't believe if you weren't retired that any of your children would be
Can you adopt me, Pete?
Recipients of that. You'd have to be under 18 unless you're going to college.
Is any other questions?
I like this.
There is. I think we might have somebody online, Mr. Devitt.
Anybody online that would like to testify?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Rick Davies, President of Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 904, and Chairman of the Alaska Veterans Foundation.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity to testify, and I would like to specifically thank Representative Cott and the many co-sponsors for this resolution. As most of you know, over the last 3 years, all of the 9 national veterans organizations in America have been working together, which is a unique thing, to address the failure of Congress and our various administrations to meet the legally required and certainly morally obligated needs of our current and future veterans, particularly in their health care area. But we've seen little progress. The problems actually in our study appear to be structural, and it's time for some new ideas. I think as a nation, we recognize that we ensure the health care of the poor, the old, and even the our illegal immigrants, but not for the men and women who stand guard for America. Alaska is now, and will likely continue to be, at its highest military deployment since World War II. That means more and more Alaskans are serving in harm's way overseas. Alaskans are being killed and wounded. Their families are being are hurting, not just because their husbands or wives or family members are in harm's way, but because they're financially distressed. If you have a copy of our talking paper, one of the interesting things that Alaskans don't understand is if you're in the active reserve or National Guard, if you're activated and you have a full-time job, you have just lost the health care from that full-time job, although you may be guaranteed return to that job. Your family has lost the full-time health care that's provided by that job. Now, you certainly receive a certain amount of health care while you're in service, but when you come back from overseas service and probably or possibly with some injury, those injuries are excluded from any new health care programs that you may apply for, and Alaskans are being hurt because of that. One of the problems, I'm going to speak sort of off the paper for a minute, and I think I hope that the staff have provided you with our talking paper, and this is an active talking paper that goes through the structural problems, what this program would try to do. But I think we have an opportunity in Alaska because of our nature, because we're so rural, because we have veterans spread literally thousands of miles around, to look at some new ideas. And the VA does encourage what they call demonstration projects. And we think Alaska would be an excellent demonstration project. In recent conversations, for example, with our president in Washington, D.C., the Vietnam Veterans of America, he's very encouraged with this idea. I just provided you today a copy of his recent testimony before Congress, pointing out that there's $4.7 billion short in the VA health care program. What we're trying to do here is stop setting up new hospitals, new clinics, shipping veterans out of Alaska at the cost of millions of dollars and at the economic loss to the veterans, the medical community in Alaska in the tens of millions, because the services are here, but the bureaucracy has a certain mindset. We think we could go back to what would be characterized as the old system. We actually had VA people working at Providence Hospital, in the intake area, in the services area. These were VA employees, VA doctors, VA nurses, public health people as well, were providing services to veterans. The veteran would go to the hospital, show their veteran card, which showed that they had a service-connected disability or they were retired or whatever, and then take advantage of the services of that private health care clinic or hospital. What this does is ensure a more efficient use of the existing privately provided medical care facilities in the state. Why we spend, as the sponsor said, $2 million last year sending veterans out of the state for medical services, all of which are provided in the state. I've talked to the directors of Providence, I've talked to the directors of Alaska Regional, and no one can find a medical service need that is not provided in Alaska that these guys are being sent out to be treated for, other than residential PSD programs, post-traumatic stress. We think that we should really sit down, and the resolution directs basically the state of Alaska to sit down and think creatively about a partnership, if you will, with the Veterans Administration in providing Alaska veterans this health care. And we believe in the work that we've done, and I think if you look at the material that we provided to you, it shows it rather dramatically we can not only save the Veterans Administration a huge amount of money, but we can better take advantage and support the private medical facilities in our state. Why create a new hospital, a veterans hospital? We don't have one up here. We sort of have one over at the Air Force Base, but not really. The clinic, etc., when a veteran or their family can go to their doctor of choice, their hospital of choice, show their card, if they have a service-connected disability, the percentage of that disability would be taken off the bill, etc., etc. It's a very easily put together concept. One of the things that we discovered is $9 to $10 million a year is returned to the Alaska VA through third-party billings. In other words, you go to the VA and you get treatment, and they say, do you have any other medical insurance? They say, well, I have Blue Cross. Okay, fine. The VA then bills Blue Cross for a percentage of your medical services. That money, we think, as is the case in the Native Healthcare Program, should be returned to the state, not to the VA. And that would be seed money to begin a program within the Department of Health and Human Services, or whatever it's called today, Social Services, to begin to provide Alaska veterans the medical services that they need in the state. We don't have all the answers, but the effort over the last 3 years by the 9 national veterans organizations who finally have come together over this issue have also not found the answers. We need a program that ensures that those men and women from Alaska who stand guard for America get the medical services they need when they come home. And we think this is a good, positive first step. And we would hope that the state would put together a working task force, bring together the people involved in this, and sit down and look at a way to do this. My discussions with the doctors, the leading doctors in Anchorage and both of the hospitals, clearly indicate that they would be very supportive of this. We would literally be returning tens of millions of dollars in medical services that are currently being provided in Oregon or Seattle, or even in some cases back east for Alaska veterans. That money would be spent in Alaska. So it would have a huge economic benefit as well as a benefit to Alaska veterans. And finally, let me point out that being a disabled veteran who has to go outside of the state because the VA decides that I have to do that for medical services, at times when those services put significant emotional stress on me, my wife and children, separates me from them. And if we want to encourage care and healing, having families together at these critical times is very, very important. I have members within my organization in the Vietnam Veterans of America. They have to go out monthly for radiation treatment. All of that service is provided here in the state of Alaska. But they have to absorb their own, on themselves, the cost of taking their wives or their husbands in one case with them so that they have that kind of emotional support. We think this is a good, very positive first step, and we look forward to immediate action by your committee and by this legislature to move this forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir, and I thank you for your service. Welcome home. I think we've got a pretty good bill here, in my opinion, and I think the concept of putting some group together in the future to work on the issue might be a very good one, maybe working that over the interim. Any questions? Anybody?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Sharon Sisna here. And the question I'd like to ask the sponsor, one of the questions that I kind of had in reading the Be It Resolved on page 2, line 17 was, 16 and 17 being that we establish a system in public or private facilities in the state wherever possible. Representative Cott, was it your intention that we were really talking as close to home means that it would be essentially across the state, people in, say, Hoonah, if there was, in fact, a facility that could give the service needed, could give that service in Hoonah rather than the regional center?
Representative Cott?
Chair of Representatives, and that's correct.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, if I could make a comment about that.
Okay.
I have met various veterans that have come to Anchorage from various parts of the state where, in fact, there were local facilities for them to get treatment, and they wind up, because there's some problem, the doctor, for instance, had surgery, so wasn't able to see him that day, either having to be sent back to their community or having to somehow find some place to stay, and they oftentimes didn't have the funds to do that. That kind of problem, the problem of rehabilitation after treatments and having to go in daily and not having a support system, all of those things just really drive up costs that you'll never be able to really even estimate or gather. And so I'm very, very much in favor of this, and I do appreciate that understanding that we're really talking about services truly, truly in Alaska as close as home, as at home to us.
I agree with that, Desmond. I think the intent of the bill is for it to be wherever in the state and obviously as close to home as possible. If there's no other further discussion, I'll entertain a motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would like to make the motion to move the House Joint Resolution number 33 in the upper corner. It says 24-LS1648/A with individual attached zero physical note, individual recommendations, and move from committee.
Okay. Without objection, the bill is moved. Thank you.
Chairman, members of the committee, on behalf of myself, my staff, and the 72,000 veterans,
and all God's children.
And thank you.
Thank you for
speaking for me, Pete.
Beer liquor.
I almost objected, but
it's hard to get to. Yeah, I'd like to adjourn the meeting at 1:55.